Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us for the Benchmark Interim Webinar Results Presentation. We are joined today by Executive Chairman Peter George, Chief Financial Officer Septima Maguire, and incoming CEO Trond Williksen, who will be, I think, starting on Monday. They've had a busy morning, so apologies we're running a couple of minutes late, but I think we will be ready to start shortly. Just a quick reminder, we will be taking Q&A at the end. You can submit questions at any time via the question button at the bottom. If you can't find the question button, feel free to drop me an email. It's hannah@equitydevelopment.co.uk. We will also be running a quick poll during the webinar, simply asking if you are currently a shareholder or not. These are all anonymous answers, so we would appreciate a response to get a sense of the audience. We will also be distributing the recording later if you would like to watch it back. Otherwise, I will hand over to Peter.
Thank you, Hannah. Welcome, everybody. I apologize again for being slightly late, but welcome to the unaudited results. Just bear with me. The unaudited interim results for the second quarter and the 6 months ended the 31st of March 2020 for Benchmark Holdings PLC. So, can we go to slide two? Thank you. Obviously, it's disappointing to report H1 results showing revenues down 15% on prior year, although this is probably not surprising in these highly disruptive times. Underlying these results, though, is good performance in genetics, which is driven by our investment in Salten and its successful ramp-up, which has brought more of our salmon egg supply in-house, driving significantly improved margins. It's also true that the genetics and the salmon markets have been less impacted by COVID-19. Consequently, Benchmark have furloughed no staff in this division, with major changes being to shifts to enable social distancing, which has offset some of the improved margins with increased costs associated with this. Advanced Nutrition continue to see the impact of the weak shrimp markets and Artemia oversupply, which has been exacerbated by COVID-19. This division is taking actions to maintain market position when it reopens fully and reduce its long-term cost base to increase margins. Our health division has two main focuses. Firstly, the launch of our sea lice treatment BMK08 and our environmental system CleanTreat, which remains on track through the regulatory process. Although current circumstances have slowed regulatory timelines somewhat, pushing back launch from the planned Q1 2021 to Q2 2021. In addition, we have a full review of our vaccines and manufacturing facilities, and this is well advanced, and I expect very positive outcomes should become clear in H2. The group's restructuring is well advanced, refocusing the business on core aquaculture areas. As just stated, the review of vaccines and manufacturing is complete, and we are discussing positive outcomes that will benefit Benchmark whilst maintaining long-term employment for our staff, one of the key criteria we set. We have completed four disposals, exited loss-making areas, and restructured trial facilities. Other disposals are underway, with some very close to completion. And these disposals are still expected to generate in total 27 to 30 million. The implementation of a restructuring plan is aiming to also deliver an additional minimum £10 million in annualised based cost savings. The new management team is now in place, with Trond Williksen appointed as CEO with effect from Monday, bringing extensive aquaculture expertise across large organisations in the sector. And he'll be introducing himself at the end of this presentation. And he, of course, joins Septima Maguire, our CFO, who has already had a massive impact on the organisation. And they both join a recently slimmed down leadership team. The business is well placed to come through the COVID-19 crisis. We have strong liquidity of 63 million, having raised 42 million in February, and we have long-term debt facilities with low covenant commitments. We have further proceeds expected from the disposal and exit of non-core activities, as well as taking strong and rapid actions to conserve cash. This all puts us in a very strong position to complete our transition from an R&D investment organisation, which we have been historically, into our aim of being a profitable aqua services business. We've maintained uninterrupted operations through COVID-19 with uninterrupted customer supply and service. But I think we should also note that the fundamentals of our target markets remain strong and are likely to recover quickly, and our sector still has a very good future outlook. Can we go to slide 3, Hannah, please? So, what is the impact of COVID-19 on our markets? As I said, the salmon market is less affected and remains resilient. 70% of demand is retail, and the long production cycle means short-term factors lead to less volatility. There's been limited supply chain disruption, although increased logistical costs have impacted margins to some degree. The end market has seen some price contraction, but the Norwegian krona exchange has supported demand. Salmon disease issues such as ISA have helped egg prices, however, and sea lice issues have supported Salmosan sales and bode very well for our new BMK08 launch next year. Shrimp markets, however, are more reliant on the food services sector, with 60% of demand in this area. Consequently, there's been a drop in demand and price. However, the shorter production cycle means producers can take a wait-and-see approach, and they have reduced stocking between 20 to 70% in the main markets. And this has meant that inventory in the market has been reducing. And it was high inventory which was partly driving the price reductions. Therefore, it should show that lower inventory could support a recovery in demand and price in 2021. And this is supported by early signs of recovery of stocking in some markets, such as China, Vietnam, Thailand. Slide 4, please. So, what actions have we taken in the wake of COVID-19? Well, we took an early decision to protect the health and well-being of our staff. All office-based employees were placed on remote working and continue to be so now. We adapted shift patterns to enhance safety at manufacturing sites. And there have been some great examples of how some staff have gone above and beyond here to help. For example, our Thai nutrition plant. The province in which the plant is located and the neighbouring province implemented strict quarantine rules, meaning travel between provinces was prohibited. Many of our employees were affected by these measures, so they volunteered to stay in temporary accommodation close to the plant to maintain our operations, with many of them having to live apart from their families for a whole month. Also, in countries where we have community programs to support Benchmark's profile in the local area, such as Brazil and Colombia, and again Thailand, we've implemented programs such as food packages to support locals. Importantly, we've ensured continuity of supply and services for customers by building inventory of product and raw material to overcome disrupted supply chains. In addition, we've built much stronger online sales channels with such things as well-attended customer support webinars, which you may have noticed through LinkedIn or other social media outlets, where we have got great feedback. Critical to the long-term health of the business, of course, is cash conservation. Cash is king. To support this, we have significantly reduced variable spend, we've cut and delayed R&D and CapEx expenditure, and we're utilising government support schemes where appropriate, particularly in our health and nutrition divisions, where over 50% of employees have been included in these schemes. In addition, we've reduced the executive management team, and both the PLC and operational boards have taken temporary salary reductions. And as you would expect, no bonuses will be payable this year. The business is now preparing for the next phase as markets shift, start to lift lockdown, and we hope to see things return to normal, even if slowly. So now let me hand over to Septima, who will look at the financials and operational highlights. So Septima.
Thank you, Peter. If we can just go to slide number 6, please. Thank you. Before we jump into the detail of the interim results, I thought it important to lay out what we defined as the key financial priorities for FY20 to underpin the strategic objectives. At the end of FY19, we had a serious challenge around the balance sheet. My first priority was to ensure that it was robust enough to deliver the strategic projects, which were clearly key to the continued success of Benchmark. And consequently, my focus has been on strengthening the balance sheet, reducing the cash burn, and right-sizing the cost base. The equity raise of $42 million in February was very well supported and provided us with the capital to advance these strategic projects, whilst also providing us short-term working capital to bridge until the divestments have been completed. We've continued to focus and progress the disposals, as these will further bolster our cash position. To reduce cash burn and correspondingly right-size the cost base, we've continued to exit and close non-core activities. We're reviewing all areas of the business to ensure that the money we are spending aligns with the future strategy and creates significant shareholder value. We're also ensuring that we're adapting to the ever-changing markets in which we trade, adjusting spend so it aligns with market recovery and supports future growth at the right time. Within each division and corporate services, we've conducted an efficiency review and continue to take actions which will permanently reduce our cost base. These actions include reducing senior people and optimizing our manufacturing activities. Overall, we are ensuring that we have the right people in the right places doing the right things. The actions we're taking are expected to have an annualized impact of at least £10 million. And some have already been implemented, although the financial benefit is not yet reflected in the first half, and the balance will be implemented within the next 6 months. This plan reflects the clear pathway we've established to underpin our commitment to move the organisation from being a net R&D spend company towards profitability and to provide good foundations for the way forwards. If we can move to the next slide, let's look at the half year in review. At a headline level, as we had originally signalled, we've had a disappointing first half, with sales below the prior year by 15%. In the main, driven by weak demand in nutrition. This reduction in revenue has also driven a drop in adjusted EBITDA. Nutrition has continued to experience weak markets, which has driven adjusted EBITDA margins down year on year to 10.5%. With reduced demand in Artemia and diets, but the growth of 25% in health, which is focused on both the hatchery and grow out segments, is pleasing, as that is more of a strategic growth, which is important for the future. Whilst revenue in genetics were flat on a constant currency, they were actually above 6% above last year. This growth was driven by premium prices as we increased the number of traits within the eggs, such as CMS, IPN and sea lice resistance, and increased sales out of Iceland. This was offset in part by reduced volumes as we shift from using third-party supply of eggs over to production in Salten, our Norwegian facility. This shift of supply from third-party eggs to Salten has supported the ramp-up of the facility, driving good margin accretion in the half year. And it's reflective of the fact that the investment of £40 million in the genetics facility is starting to pay back. In animal health, the revenue reduction in the continued operation relates solely to lower revenue from the vaccine toll manufacturing, which is currently under review. This, together with a slight increase in R&D, drove a significant reduction in adjusted EBITDA for the continued operation. Next slide, please. As previously noted, we've seen the impact of genetics moving to own production, driving a significant improvement in the gross margins and the EBITDA margins. Other factors driving the genetics margin in the period were the demand from Scotland for eggs from our biosecure facility in Iceland, in light of the closure of borders to eggs from Norway, and also higher royalty payments in the period. Longer term, we expect margins in genetics to normalise in the mid-20s. The high margins in genetics have been offset by the lower toll activities in animal health and in advanced nutrition, by the important strategic decision alongside our long-time Artemia partners to reduce the price of Artemia in quarter two 2020. We see this as an important step to regain market share in light of the significant drop in price for non-GSL Artemia, positioning ourselves more strongly as the shrimp market returns to growth. Next slide, please. We can see the cost reduction programs have started to show some year-on-year reductions in operating costs, and the impact of the COVID measures have not impacted to a significant degree within H1 2020, but we do anticipate a benefit to come through in the second half. On the R&D spend, we've seen an increase in the genetic spend, reflecting our investment in the development of new traits, which is core to our strategy. The increase in animal health reflects the continued work on BMK08 and also some continued investment within the companion animal. R&D plays an important role in maintaining a strong market position. Going forward, our focus is on ensuring that our investment is aligned with the commercial opportunity to deliver shareholder return. Next slide, please. At an operating loss before tax level, the increased loss in the year-on-year of 13.2 million was driven, of course, by the decline in trading of 4.6 million, but also an increase in year-on-year financial expenses of 7.5 million and an increase in depreciation with Salton coming online. Continued exchange fluctuations were the main driver of the exchange losses. And we also had non-cash losses on the unhedged components of the swaps related to our bonds. In addition, an overall higher coupon on the NOC bond relative to the previous RCFs, combined with a larger overall drawings, drove the increase of the interest cost by 1.6 million. Next slide. As you can see, the main driver of the improvement in the net debt position was the equity raise. Absent the raise, FX movements, and the implementation of the new leasing standard, we would have had an increase in net debt of 3.1 million since FY19. Whilst reduced trading, of course, impacted our cash flow, this was offset in part by reduced working capital. CapEx was mainly limited to maintenance CapEx, with a focus on ensuring that our regulatory and health and safety obligations continued to be addressed. We've created good headroom at a liquidity covenant level and continue to maintain a cash position with strong cash position with cash at the 27th of May of £55.4 million and the RCF of $15 million US dollars remains undrawn. As we look to the future, we anticipate further strengthening this position through the disposals and cost-saving plans. Next slide, please. As you will know, we report our quarterly results in compliance with our bond obligation. In the main, quarter two represents a slightly stronger trading period than our first quarter, but with the same underlying trends across all of the divisions. Next slide, please. Operationally, there were a number of key areas of note around projects which provide the foundations for our future strategic growth. Most notable of which, for animal health, was the submission in H1 2020 of the marketing authorisation to the Norwegian regulators for BMK08, and also the commencement of the procurement process for the next clean feed units. As you will recollect in genetics, in FY19, we unwound the salmon joint venture in Chile and took control of a facility as a base to develop local production. In H1, we continue to develop this local production capabilities with the establishment of a grow-out facility to support the ramp-up. And we remain on track to start selling locally produced eggs in Chile in calendar year 2021. We've also made considerable progress on the SPR shrimp programmes, and whilst the shrimp market is in flux, we achieved first test market sales and are using this time to continue trials in key territories, gaining market data for a launch, and also progressing towards the construction of a multiplication centre in Thailand with their local partners. These preparations will allow us to be fully market ready when the shrimp market returns to growth. I'll now hand you back to Peter.
Thank you, Saptima. So let's have a look at some strategy issues here. So we continue to believe that the long-term fundamentals of our sector remain very strong. There's an increasing need for sustainable food production. Aquaculture continues to be a strong market, and some of the specific areas that Benchmark addresses, such as environmental improvements and animal welfare challenges, require solutions with increasing urgency. Consumers are demanding this. It's also true that COVID-19 has reinforced our core strategy of focusing on our key areas of competency, increasing our financial flexibility, driving synergies, and being much more selective where we invest. Can we go to the next slide, please? So, our strategic priorities haven't changed. Number one remains the completion of our restructuring program, completing the disposals, which continue to happen despite the disruption in the markets. And in addition, sorting the long-term future of contract manufacturing and the vaccines facility is strongly in play at the moment. And I hope that during H2, we'll see a very positive outcome to these discussions. Secondly, the commercial launch of BMK08 in Cleantree is important in our transition from an R&D investment company to a profitable aqua services provider. The regulatory process remains on track, if slightly delayed by the COVID restrictions, and we've moved out the timeline for commercial launch slightly into Q2 2021 because of this. Growth in established markets and investments that leverage our platform have been slowed by the current circumstances to conserve cash, but they will be re-implemented immediately as the markets recover. And positioning Benchmark in areas of future growth is an area our new CEO will address over the next few months as he gets his feet firmly under the table. So next slide, please. As I've said already, and is my key promise to the market, we will remain focused on moving from R&D investment to a profitable aqua services provider. We're in a solid financial position, supported by existing liquidity and a cash conservation plan, with a program of disposals and restructuring ongoing, which strengthen all of these considerably. Continue to focus on our commercial launch of BMK08 and Cleantree is a priority. We've got great visibility of our order book in genetics through the whole of the rest of this year, with a resilient salmon market. Challenging conditions in shrimp markets are expected to continue through to the end of the financial year, however, but early evidence of recovery in countries emerging from lockdown, such as China, Vietnam, Thailand, strong shrimp markets are beginning to show. And last from me, but possibly one of the most important factors in Benchmark, has been the appointment of Trond Villichsen as CEO with effect from Monday, effectively. So with that said, let me hand over to him to let him introduce himself. Trond.
Thank you, Peter, and thank you for the introduction. I am Trond Villichsen, and as announced, I will attend the role as the CEO of Benchmark from Monday on.
You're a little quiet, Trond. You might want to just hold your mic.
January 1st. I really look forward to that, both for the opportunity it represents and also the challenge of taking over the group. From my resume, you can see that I have come with some experience. This is actually my third assignment as a CEO of a publicly listed company. And I come to the position with more than 20 years of executive experience, mostly from the aquaculture industry, which Benchmark is a part of and belongs in. I intend to use this experience to get the job done. I'm here to develop and I'm here to build the company. A few words on why I find Benchmark interesting. First of all, the group is strategically well positioned within the sustainable aquaculture industry, which I belong to most of my commercial career and which I strongly believe in as an industry. I still believe it's an industry in the early phase that has a very strong development ahead of it. I also see the company, Benchmark, it has a very relevant footprint in this industry within genetics, advanced nutrition, and animal health. Each of the three divisions, but more so together, have a very relevant value proposition to an aquaculture industry, which I think will and need to develop in a sustainable way going forward. In my view, Benchmark is also has a very competent organization, very competent employees, and a very, very strong knowledge base, which could be expanded on. In total, in my view, the group holds, from where it is today, a huge potential going forward, a huge potential. In order to take that out, however, will require focus, the right focus. And as Peter has pointed out several times during his presentation today, and which has been very clearly stated by the company over the last year, the group has embarked on a journey from R&D investment to become a profitable aqua service provider. And in short, this also represents the mandate that I've been given. Since the appointment in April, I've been given the opportunity to gain insight into the group. This has been very helpful. Peter and the management team have invited me in, and I've been participating in a series of activities, including listening into town halls, which is very much used in this organization to communicate broadly to the employees. As well as being invited into processes and decision-making processes over the last 2 months or so. This has given me a unique opportunity to gain the insight needed to hit the ground running, to very quickly get into the chair, and that's my intention. I would also like to point out that I subscribe very strongly to the restructuring actions that has been taken by Peter Septima and the board and the management over the last year. I think the actions have been necessary as a step on the way to develop the group for the future. I'm also impressed how the processes have been handled, and that also includes the way that the COVID-19 pandemic has been dealt with by the organization. Monday I attend. My task will be to take on the wheel to continue and complete the job that has been initiated now. And with Septima, the board, and the rest of the management team to develop and eventually positioning the group for the future. I see a lot of opportunity going forward. I look forward to the journey, and I look forward to having contact with you going forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Trom. So I think we're open to questions if anybody has any.
Just a reminder to everyone that they can submit questions through the question option on the side, but we have had a couple in already. Obviously, in light of the Asian markets unlocking a little bit ahead of Europe and North America, are you seeing any pickup in activity there, which could give encouraging signs going forward?
We are. And this particularly impacts the shrimp market, which is Asia's a very big part of the shrimp market. China in particular is a very big player in the shrimp market. So we're seeing significant uplift in demand, but also a beginning to restock ponds for shrimp in Vietnam, China and Thailand, for example, which are quite important markets. And the Chinese market for purchasing shrimp is also picking up. The interesting thing about what COVID-19 seems to have done, and it'll be interesting to see whether this is a long-term issue or whether it's just a short-term response, is there's been some slight changes in markets in the way that consumers purchase and both shrimp and salmon, and in China, all sorts of seafood as well. There was a very strong propensity in Asia to buy live fish or very fresh fish through wet markets. And those haven't been available during lockdown. So there's been quite a strong acceptance in Asia of frozen product and prepared product in that we would see as the norm in Europe and North America, for example. And historically, there's been a resistance to that, but that seems to have, whether that's a short-term issue or whether it continues long-term, and if it did continue long-term, that would be very good for the long-term market, particularly, I think, that the salmon market in Asia, which would grow. And then we're seeing also a shift in North America during the lockdown to utilize things like salmon was predominantly restaurant fare and was not used so much in the home. But that's changed significantly during this process. And it is felt that that will be a long-term change because consumers are getting more used to having salmon on their home menu, not just the restaurant menu. So potentially that has good growth options for both once things lift. That's quite a long answer to a short question, but hopefully it gives you a flavour for how we are trying to keep our finger on the pulse of what's happening in our end markets.
Very helpful. Next up, perhaps one for you, Septima. I know that we will be publishing updated forecasts shortly, but a question is, when do your brokers expect the company to be generating positive free cash flow on a non-adjusted annualised basis?
That's a very important question. And ultimately, that is what we're trying to drive towards. We're trying to drive towards profitability, which drops down into generated cash. Our house brokers issued a note this morning and they have it returning to cash, kind of transitioning between 21 and FY22. And that's our strategic objective in that period of time, is to move us towards that cash generation. Around that transition from FY21 into financial year 22. And that will be helped by a lot of things. That will be supported by a lot of things. It'll be supported by the cost-saving endeavours to ultimately take the business that we have and ensure that each individual unit becomes cash positive on its own. Then, of course, we have the BMK08 story, and it comes in on top. But we want to have a business that is commercially viable at all angles. And that's what we're focusing on. So it's not waiting for a white knight to come in. It's controlling your own financial and fiscal destiny and making those strong steps to make sure that we get to the place that we think, we believe, and we can see that we can get to in the most appropriate manner possible.
Did you have something to add to that, Peter?
No.
I then guess, leading on from that, the question is, how should we visualise your stock? You know, are you growth story with BMK08 being a transformative product for you? Or are you a recovery story as you return to profitability after the measures that you've detailed, Septima?
I see that's a good question from Frank there. So, Frank, it's a bit... there's two things that we need to do here with Benchmark. We absolutely need to transform this business from what has been a net R&D spend organization, and quite frankly, and I am being honest and frank, not spending that very wisely historically. And it needed to stop doing that. It needed to focus on what it's good at. And we are doing that. We're transforming this business. So what one of the criteria that me and Septima set ourselves when we first sat down, when Septima joined, was that irrespective of whether BMK08 succeeded or didn't succeed, we want a business that has its underlying operations being profitable. And by profitable, I mean generating true cash, not just some adjusted EBITDA profitable. So that means that the nutrition business, the genetics business, the health business have to have core activities that are profitable. And then when you get really nice things like BMK08, which is going to generate 75 million of sales at peak sales if we get it licensed, and is going to be at a 60% margin, then that's all upside. It's all bunts. It's beautiful. It adds massive to the growth story and adds massively to the valuation. Now, worst case scenario is BMK doesn't get approval. I'm not in any way suggesting it won't. I'm just saying that's a worst case scenario. But even then, we've got CleanTree, which is an environmental system that isn't only valuable to BMK08. It's valuable to any bath treatment for salmon, or not just salmon, for other species too. So that in itself could continue generating revenues. That doesn't need to have license. It's an environmental improvement process. So it's a bit of both, and we're very, very positive about the long-term outcome. It's an exciting story.
Thanks. All right, and one from Alex. What's been the progress in the disposal of your non-core companion animal health products such as HypoCat and Sweet Itch? Another company has recently announced the development of a cat allergy solution based upon the same approach as HypoCat. If this is the case, should it be the case that HypoCat IP should have significant value?
Well, you're absolutely right. There has been another competitor looking at a similar area in HypoCat. And it's a really big debate as to whether HypoCat does have significant value or quite the opposite, doesn't. Because it's interesting in that it's a treatment that is given to the cat for the benefit of the human, and vets are not great lovers of those types of treatments. You know, it's for health and well-being of an animal, why would you give it a treatment for the benefit of something else altogether? So it's you treat the cat to reduce allergies in the human, and vets are not a great lover of that, as I said. So I think we've seen some resistance to that when we've spoken to the market about it. The fact that there's more than one potential out there means that it's a race to market as well. And we are not looking to focus on animal products. We will be dropping the word animal for any parts of our division. We're an aquaculture business. We're looking at aqua services. So we focus on anything that's to do with fish or crustacea, all those type of things, not cats, not dogs, not horses. So that's why we're looking to exit those. When we're talking about disposals and exits, Alex, it probably won't surprise you that the knowledge services businesses that we're exiting from, those businesses that have revenues, have profit associated with them, like Fish Vet Group, like Improve, like the websites, which we're in the process of disposing, are holding price and are holding interest from potential acquirers. Those that are less likely to hold price and are generating less interest from acquirers of those that have long-term future outcomes but require quite a lot of investment to get them to that place. So what we want to do is we want to get away from things that are not our core focus, and animal products are not our core focus, and focus on aqua. So we don't see them as particularly highly valuable, certainly not to us. And if there was any value, it would be in the future. And if we do a deal, we might try and keep some of that royalty potential going forward.
Thank you. Then I think over to you, Tron, as somebody who is incoming and taking a fresh view on Benchmark, what are the top three things on your to-do list?
Well, first of all, of course, to get a very good introduction to the organization, to install myself as part of the organization, that is always the first thing that you start off with. And it's a challenge these days, since we cannot travel. So, we have to work with the tools we have and get adjusted to that. So that will be, of course, my first priority. You know, in terms of priorities in terms of developing the company, I think to continue the work that is being done on the restructuring, on the focusing of the business that is very well described by Peter and Septima, that they have been driving over the last, especially during the last year, you know, to complete that in a very good way in order to get the basis for the organization is, of course, the first priority that I will start on. And then when you have that base, of course, then you move into a second phase where you are taking the organization and positioning it for the future.
Thanks, Tron. Then I know the message has been extremely consistent in terms of your ambition to move from a net R&D business to a genuinely cash profitable business. So what can you change to improve the ROI on your R&D spend?
I think it's, I'm not sure if you, Peter, would you like to answer that or should I do that?
No, I think we've discussed it enough that you can answer that, Tron.
No, but I think what you can do is to focus. And what, you know, the company has been very broad at its approach to everything. Peter is stating very clearly that, you know, we are going to be an aquaculture business. We are going to transfer the business to R&D spend on things that actually will give profitability and has a chance to get profitability. The more speculative long-term spend of R&D will be reduced. It has to be reduced in order to drive the transition of this organization from being an R&D spent organization towards profitability. So that's the grips that has to be taken, and that is the grips that are taken during the last year, and that will be continued to be taken going forward.
I think it's also very important to take a marketing and a commercial view of potential R&D spend. So historically, I think there's been an over reliance upon forecasts that didn't really hold up when you did a marketing and a commercial view of them. So it looks like a good return on investment if you've got really high returns in the future. But if those returns, when you look at them closely, don't hold up to scrutiny, then all of a sudden your whole ROI model collapses at the beginning and you never should have made the investment in the first place. So with Septima is so much better at asking those difficult questions and utilizing the commercial team, utilizing the marketing team to say, when we challenge this, does this really stand up to scrutiny? And if it doesn't, stop doing it. It's a pointless exercise. Time out, move on to something else. So that's something that we've really tightened, and we stopped doing things that don't give a really good return just because they were nice to do, or just because scientifically they were interesting, or they tick some nice box. And we're looking at things that generate real returns.
And you're making, you know, being very clear and making excellent progress towards those goals. So perhaps it's a little early to be talking about a dividend, but what is the board's general feelings on moving in that direction?
The board's general feelings are get to profitability and hold management's feet to the fire until we get to that point. Make sure that all of the underlying operations are standalone profitable. And absolutely, I would love to be a dividend paying organization, but we have to tick those boxes. And by profitable, as I think I've said two or three times already, I mean cash generative profitable. I don't mean lots of adjusted EBITDA numbers that make them look like it's profitable. We've got debt that we've got to pay down. The business has got quite a high level of debt, but it's not bonds. So our forward forecasts need to be having a profit and EBITDA and cash generation that has got a nice comparator to the amount of debt that's in the business. When we've got all of those balances right, we're in a strong position then to pay dividends, and we absolutely would want to be in that position long term.
Good answer. Last question then that we have so far is around Clean Treat and whether the technical challenges have been resolved and whether the industry is ready to adjust to the changes in the treatment methodology.
Well, definitely the technical challenges have been met, and interestingly enough, this is one of the discussions I had with Tromp when we were going through the recruitment process, because when Tromp was at SalMar, he saw the early version of Clean Treat because SalMar was running the clinical trials, or we were running the clinical trials in SalMar farms. And the challenges were quite high at that point. We were quite slow in the way that we were treating, in the number of processes that we could run in a day, which meant that if that was the model that we were using, the cost of the well boats to the producer would have been beyond commercially viable for them. So what we had to do is we needed to improve the throughput in the Clean Treat system. And we've done that fourfold. We've got a fourfold improvement in that. We can reuse water and we can get a lot more higher of volume through it. So it now makes it very commercially viable. And we've actually, the later trials were running using that methodology. So the technical challenges have definitely been overcome. Now, what we're doing is we're now in the process of, we've picked our partner to build the Clean Treat. So this will be modification of well boats with our Clean Treat systems fitted onto the well boats. And that's all going to be placed here in the UK, I'm pleased to say. We've picked a partner up in Scotland, in Glasgow, to help us build the Clean Treat systems onto well boats. And they have got a very good process for doing that. We're very pleased with them as a partner. So all of that, I think, means that Clean Treat, whether it's using BMK08 or whether it's using other medicines as an environmental purification system standalone, is very, very good. With BMK08, it's amazing for sea lice. And on the basis that we get 08 license, then it'll be transformative to the market for sure. And is the market ready for it? Prepared to change? The market has to change because there's consumer demand, there's regulatory demand, there's governmental demand about improving the environmental footprint of seafood. And, you know, the market can't continue down its historic route. We've seen what happens when you do that. When you look at land-based farming and the protein production on land-based farming and how people are turned off from that and are moving to away from meat and it's high profile in the way that's environmental impact that's happening. Seafood cannot do the same thing. It has to make that leap into the environmental improvement that Benchmark's suggesting. So I think it's ready to leap, and customers are queuing up to use it, so we feel comfortable that they are.
Always a positive sign. Perhaps a bigger picture question to finish off on with then. With your restructurings, disposal and general strategic progression, what do you feel the key trade-offs that you've had to wrestle with are?
Well, I'm going to let Septima answer some of this as well. But my key trade-off has been, you know, we have a responsibility as an organisation to our employees. And you can't just dismiss that responsibility. So when you're looking to exit certain businesses, close down certain businesses, or look for partnerships to continue certain businesses, protecting the long-term employment of employees has been a really big part of what we tried to do. It takes longer to do these type of things if you want to take that attitude. You could just take a brutal attitude and say, not my problem, we're not interested anymore, we're exiting from it. We're not taking that, because I think that gives the wrong message to employees in the long term, and we want to be seen as a good and fair employer. So trying to find people that were genuinely interested in the long-term employment of our staff was important. So that's been quite a big trade-off in time to do that. And Septima, you might have some other comments there.
Well, I think it's more of a general comment. And it really pertains to the kind of the current economic crisis and the COVID-19 measures that we put into place, which are temporary in nature, but we can't ask things of our own people that we can't, we shouldn't ask of ourselves. And one of the things that was one of the very immediate measures that was put in place before all of the rest of the secondary programs was I went to the PLC board and the ops board and said, if we're going to make cost cutting measures for COVID-19 cash conservation, will you guys take a pay cut? And, you know, got resounding support in terms of stuff like that. You know, we talked about the fact that there was going to be no bonuses this year. There was resounding support of that. There was, and these, you know, parts of our business are doing okay, which is great from a point of view. So in terms of these restructuring programs, the exits, the disposals, what we're all trying to do is be our best selves in terms of how we treat our employees, making sure we pick good partners, making sure that we find good homes for all of the different assets that we've been seeking to dispose of. These aren't bad businesses. They're not bad people. They're really good businesses with really good people. And we appreciate that. The future of our business and the people that we will have in the business going forward may differ, but we want that caliber of people in the business. And our focus is on ensuring, you know, the well-being of all employees, be they exiting or being retained, and try and do our best, which is what the attitude has been around our disposal and restructuring programs. We try and do our best to find a good home for all of our employees. And that's really all we can do at the moment.
And our employees appreciate open and honest communication, which we've been very open about furloughing. We've been very open about disposals and closure of the business. And one of the key things that I think has helped with Trant being involved in the last 2 months is that he's been able to join our town hall. You know, we've got 1,100 employees in 27 locations in 21 countries around the world. So our town halls have always been online. But Trant's been able to join those via Zoom to hear the way that we message things internally, to understand that we are very open and honest. And that means that that consistency will continue when Trant does the next all staff, which is on the 8th of June, and he'll be leading that one. So,
thank you. Very important to walk the talk when it comes to the messaging that we're all in it together. Well, listen, thank you to you all. That's us out of questions. A reminder to our viewers that you can find a recording later, plus some research in due course at Equity Development's website. Otherwise, I wish you all a very good afternoon.
Yeah, thank you, everyone, for attending. Thank you.